Moncrief on News Talk.
There's a man called Kevin Roberts, who's head of the conservative American think tank, the Heritage Foundation. The foundation is generally regarded as a major force in shaping Trumpism. And according to Roberts, in an interview he gave just today, he says it's here to stay. He says that subsequent American presidents will continue on with their agenda. So does that mean, at the very least, the end of the previous version of the Republican Party? We're joined by Scott Lucas from the Clinton Institute. Good afternoon, Scott.
Very good afternoon to you, Sean.
How much of Trumpism actually comes from Trump?
Well, a lot of it comes from the personality cult around Trump. But a lot of it comes from a Trump camp, which includes different groups. The first is you've got friends and family network, which come from the financial and the economic world, who simply see economics not as a question of, you know, the national economic approach, national economic strategy. They see it as profit-making. What can they can make out of this? Then beyond this, you get certain tech entrepreneurs who are beyond Trump, such as a man named, we know about Elon Musk, but even more important, a man named Peter Thiel. Mm. And Peter Thiel, who says democracy does not exist, should not exist, he's the man who launched the career of J.D. Vance back in around 2008, 2009. And, of course, Vance is now vice president of the United States. Then you have part of Trumpism being, and we need to be honest about this, being white nationalist, indeed even white supremacist, who actually believe not just the question of opposing immigration, but the question that America is being invaded by non-white movements. So there's a range of different forces involved in Trumpism. But here's where I agree with Kevin Roberts, and that is this is no longer the Republican Party. This is no longer the Republicans. This is a much different force. Trumpism is a far right, and I know what that word means. It's a far right authoritarian approach, both to running the United States and also in terms of America's relationship with Ireland and the world.
And all those disparate groups that you mentioned there, do their aims pretty much align with those of the Heritage Foundation, or is the Heritage Foundation just an additional part of it?
No, the Heritage Foundation is central to this, but I must emphasize the major change in the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation was created in 1973, but it really emerges during the Reagan years, and it's part of Reagan Republicanism, and that is conservatism. That is very much conservatism, the idea of a smaller government, even though Ronald Reagan increased federal spending quite a lot, the idea of limiting certain affirmative action programs, and the idea of a very strong national security strategy, including facing off against the Soviet Union. This Heritage Foundation, through a document called Project 2025, which is really the blueprint for the Trump administration, is not just about limiting government. It's about destroying, demolishing government agencies to turn them into loyalist outposts of the presidency, of Donald Trump. It's about an economics which is based more on making quick profits. It's on cutting essential social services that Reagan would never touch, like Medicare and Medicaid. And perhaps most significantly, it is about not defending national security by challenging adversaries like the Soviet Union. It's about actually aligning with Russia if there is a possibility of making economic gains. And perhaps most significantly, it's about breaking the alliances that Reagan cherished, including alliances with Europe.
So does that imply to us then that a change has also taken place within the Heritage Foundation itself?
Yeah, the Heritage Foundation very much is a much different creature under Kevin Roberts. And that very much is part of a break. It's almost the Civil War for the Republican Party. When the Republican Party lost the election in 2012, that was Barack Obama's second term, the question was where it would go next. And you might remember there was a lot of economic questions. We were coming out of the great financial crash. You might know that it was coming through a very turbulent period in American foreign policy after the interventions in Iraq and Afghanistan. And we had 16 Republican candidates for president in 2016. Donald Trump never identified as a Republican. He just happened to run for the Republican nomination. So when Trump won that, that effectively started a civil war within the Republican Party between his vision and those around him and the more traditional Republican Party. And what happened here is that Heritage decided to side with Trump. And that's why when Trump was out of power between 2021 and 2024, they spent 2 years on this blueprint for what would happen if Trump took a presidency for a second time.
Mm. And so what's left of the traditional Republican Party? Are there any of them left?
There are. I mean, it's not like all of them have disappeared. And, of course, you have to remember, in America, you have to talk about local and state as well as national level.
Mm.
But in terms of the dominant places now, the Trumpists have taken over the Republican Party in the House of Representatives, the lower chamber of Congress. That was happening in Trump's first term. It's now clear there in the second term. The Trumpists are now trying to effectively take over the Republican Party in the Senate so that the Senate can at no point break, challenge what Trump is doing. And Trumpists have now taken over many state legislatures. So that vision that they have, which is not one of a smaller U.S. government, but one which is still responsible, one which still operates within the rules of the game, that vision of breaking the rules of the game, including breaking the courts, including breaking U.S. agencies, that Trumpism is now shot through American economic and political elites.
Mm-hmm. And do you get the sense that voters who voted for Trump, were they voting for that?
No. When people voted for Trump in 2024, there'll be some diehards that, as he put it, they would vote for him even if he shot a man in the middle of Fifth Avenue in New York City.
Mm.
But what swung that election were two major issues, in my opinion. One was the state of the U.S. economy and its future, and the one was immigration. On immigration, Trump's detain, deport approach, including to legal immigrants as well as undocumented immigrants, his defiance of the courts has actually alienated a lot of people who vote for him. So he has a negative rating on immigration now of about minus 7% between disapproval and approval. And on the economy, the fact that inflation is going up in the states, that you're not seeing an increase in employment, that you've got a great deal of instability because of Trump's tariffs, that you've had a lot of cuts in government services, Trump now has about a minus 18% approval rating, minus 18 on the economy, and he's got about a minus 30% rating on inflation. In other words, only about one-third of Americans approve of what he's doing regarding inflation. And that, I think, beyond the ideology, beyond the far-right approach of the administration, that's what's going to be key in the congressional elections next year and in the presidential elections in 2028 if the Trumpists don't try to rig the system.
If they don't manage to do that, as far as we know, Trump won't be running for re-election, but if some Trump-like candidate runs for re-election and fails to be elected, what happens to the Republican Party then? Does that plunge it into another crisis?
No, it's going to be an all-out battle. I mean, first of all, let's put the person in the room. J.D. Vance is going to run in 2028. Mm. He's going to try to wear Trump's mantle. So if Vance wins, then all these prospects I'm talking to you about further destruction of the American system, further destruction of America's standing in the world, including its alliances, that continues. If Vance loses, then, as always, when you have a movement which loses, you have a reassessment. Now, remember, we were there in 2020 with Trump because he lost that election to Joe Biden. But the story is that the Trumpists said, our work here is incomplete. They effectively defeated the traditional Republicans when they were in opposition. If they lose in 2028, would they be able to defeat the Republicans again in a future realignment of the party? The key here is there may not be much of the Republican Party left in 2028, if the Trump approach continues over the next 3.5 years.
Mm. Just going back to the policy of breaking down the old international alliances, why do they want to do that? Why would they argue that's in the U.S.'s interest to do that?
Because this is a transactional approach when you talk about Trumpists. They want to know what they can get in terms of profits, sometimes personal profits. They want to be able to proceed bilaterally, not multilaterally. They don't want to have to deal with 5, 10, 27 countries. As a result of that, they don't like the United Nations. But more importantly for Ireland, they want to break up the European Union. And not only do they want to break up the European Union, the type of people they feel comfortable dealing with are often those we would consider adversaries. So right now, for example, they're trying to strike an economic deal with Russia to impose on Ukraine, to force it to give up more territory. Trump has just announced in the past 24 hours an arrangement with China to give it NVIDIA computer chips, microchips, even though that might be a security threat. And again, most importantly, they see far-right European parties as being the parties they can work with. And that is why J.D. Vance, throughout this year, has worked with the far-right German party, AfD, to try to put it in power, and why J.D. Vance is currently working with the Reform Party of a former Trump employee, Nigel Farage, to try to put it in power in the U.K.
And that recent policy document that was released seemed to view the European Union as the enemy and barely mentioned Russia at all. Is that tactical, or do they genuinely think that?
No, they believe it. They believe that they can deal with the Kremlin, so they call it a strategic realignment. Remember that Donald Trump has long had an admiration for Vladimir Putin, and remember that Putin has played upon that, especially from the start of this year, by dangling the idea of joint U.S.-Russian economic projects in energy, in rare earth minerals, and in other investment and manufacturing sectors. But if you go to talk about Europe in terms of where we are there, they genuinely believe that far-right movements are the way forward because the Trump camp believes in a conspiracy theory called the Great Replacement. And in this national security strategy, they effectively say Europe is facing civilizational erasure because European countries, in other words, white European countries, are being overrun by immigrants, in other words, by non-whites. And it's that view of race and immigration, which means that they don't believe in supporting democratic movements in Europe. They actually, in fact, will claim that those democratic movements are obsolete. And Donald Trump just repeated this overnight when he called those democratic movements weak. So, yes, their natural alliances would be with hard-right, far-right parties in Europe, in the U.K., and if there was a hard-right party in Ireland, they would be trying to make an alliance with that to try to destabilize the government here.
Is the transatlantic relationship over then?
The German Chancellor, Friedrich Merz, who has long been a diehard supporter of the transatlantic relationship, has said twice over the past 2 days that this national security strategy of the United States represents a break by those people who are behind it. And these are the J.D. Vances. These are the Steve Witkoff, Trump's envoy. These are the Jared Kushners. And he has said it is now time for the European Union and for European countries to realize they must plan for the future politically, economically, and militarily. They must plan for this in terms of their efforts. The Europe cannot follow American efforts now. And that means Europe has to be able to organize itself within NATO. It means the European Union has to take on these challenges. And it means that individual countries cannot simply say, you know what, at the end of the day, the American economy or American politicians, they've got us covered.
Scott, thanks for talking to us today. That was Scott Lucas there from the Clinton Institute in UCD.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.